forget to do this. I'll forget to do that. Yeah. Go on, carry on. I'm just going to say before we, I've just started recording. I always forget to start recording. And just to go back to where we were to explain a few bits and bobs, Esme is in the other side of the world in New Zealand. We know each other from London. We've done races, 24-hour relay things, quite a lot of stuff together. Esme is very switched on with bike racing in the men's and women's side of the sport. I've been wondering about doing this for a while, about doing a podcast once a month, very much focused on bike racing on both sides of the sport. And I think Jimmy, our lovely friend Jimmy, turned around to me and said, we were talking about it for ages, me and Jimmy. And Jimmy was like, why don't you ask Esme to do it with you? So long and short of it, once a month, we're going to do an episode where we talk about the bike racing that has happened and the bike racing that is happening. And before we've just been having a catch up because we haven't chatted to each other for a while. But before we end up going properly down the rabbit hole, which we very nearly did then, obviously so much has happened in the Tour de France this year and you're having to watch it at weird times of the day.
Yeah, so everything happens during the night for me. So yeah, we were saying it's 8:30 here at night for me now. So I guess in your terms, like all the Tour de France stuff, they're all getting ready for the stage and I'm getting ready for bed.
Yeah,
you know, like, and it's really difficult to wake up. If I wake up in the middle of the night, I just want to check my phone and be like, oh, what's going on? And it's really difficult then to kind of switch off and go back to sleep. So yeah, it's quite easy for like the classics when there's one race and it's the weekend. So I'll wake up, I won't check my phone, I'll go watch the recording of it. But it feels, I'm sad because I don't get that like live element of it unless I stay up. Like I stayed up to watch the women's road race at the Olympics. Well, that wasn't too bad because it was Tokyo, but like that time difference was kind of quite nice for me. But some of the women's, like the women's first, the Paris-Roubaix, I stayed up and watched that and things like that. So occasionally I will, but I can't do it like all the time. So for the Tour de France, I haven't actually stayed up for anything, but for a couple where I've been like, I'll stay off social media. I won't look what happened. I won't check YouTube to see the highlights and stuff because I don't want to ruin it for myself. But yeah, I miss the watching it live element being in New Zealand. So it's quite difficult, but
in contrast, you're in probably one of the coolest countries in the world. So
yeah,
you know,
I mean, the payoff is high. And the Worlds this year are in Australia.
They're in Adelaide, is it?
Wollongong, so like south of Sydney.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. I don't know why I thought it was Adelaide.
I'm not too sure like about the routes and stuff. I haven't looked at the routes yet.
It might be that the Tour Down Under's back again. That might be why I'm thinking of Adelaide, which is because that's all based in Adelaide, isn't it? And they just do routes out of there, and all the teams stay in Adelaide, and there's like a bit of a festival for it. I really wanted to go out for that one as well, but yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, you're lucky that the world is going to be that way. And then the year after is Glasgow.
Yeah,
and the Glasgow one's going to be the first one where they pull all of the world championships together at the same time. So cyclocross, mountain biking, road, time trial, BMX, like the I don't even know what you call it, like the dancey ones. I don't know.
Those, like, yeah, I don't know the name, but the performance cycling, acrobatic cycling. Love it. Like, that's amazing. Like, as a fan, you get to watch it all at once. But I feel for like the Tom Pidcocks and the multi event, especially the track riders, like you've got Balsamo. Does she go for the track? Does she go for the road? Like, what are they going to do in that situation? So that would be interesting for them.
But, from a fan perspective, it'd be amazing because everything's at the same time, at the same place at once. But from a rider perspective, it just seems like carnage.
Yeah, what do you do? Like, what are you meant to target?
Yeah.
But then leaves it more open and more exciting for other winners, maybe. Like, you won't get people going and sweeping up everything. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But that's going to be good. That will be good.
And I mean, the Australian ones will be good because I don't think there's been one in Australia for quite a few years. Mm-hmm. I think the last one was, I can't remember when it was, but I'm pretty sure it was one that Cav was targeting and he didn't win, because I was listening to his audiobook the other day. And I think it was the year before he was world champion, maybe. So was that 2010, 2011? It's quite a while ago.
Yeah. It's going to be good. Hopefully, I haven't booked anything yet, but hopefully going over for it. Nice. And that'll be great, because I was in Yorkshire for the Worlds before I left. And that was incredible. That was the year Van Vleuten went off, like, massive solo. And then the day Mads Pedersen won in the piss and rain as well. So, yeah, hopefully it won't be like in Australia. But, yeah, end of winter. It'll be interesting. So yeah, hopefully getting over for that. But I was
actually the one in the UK was when I was cycling across Australia. So I missed it.
Yeah. It was good fun.
And was it Australia? I think it was Australia. I'm pretty sure it was Australia. I can't remember now. But I definitely wasn't in the UK at that point. And yeah, I mean, Mads Pedersen winning in, I think Mads Pedersen was a rider that no one thought would win, but he was the hardest man on the day.
Yeah. And that's what it came down to. Like, people were dropping out, you know, shaking, shivering, like proper Yorkshire downpours that day as well. And yeah, everyone kind of, even when it came down to like the last few as well, like people didn't think he was going to win. And we'd all like hustled into the pub. And they had it up on these big screens. And I put my phone, like, I've still got the video somewhere. It's so funny. I put my phone up to record the reaction of the sprint. Yeah. And there's these, like, two, I think they were, like, Swedish or something. Or, like, maybe they were Italian. I think, was it Trentin that was there? I can't remember now. But they were gutted by the result. And everyone's like, "Wow, yeah." And they're just like, "Damn." So it was such a strange little week. It was amazing, though. And to be in Yorkshire, in Harrogate, shook Nairo Quintana's hand. I was so chuffed about that.
That's cool.
I saw him. He was outside a little cafe and I was like, "Hola, good luck in Yorkshire." But I was like, he's not going to win. It's like not his race at all. But I was like, he's here. That's nice.
It's still kind of cool that he was there though, right? Like, yeah.
I love it. The respect of the sport.
Yeah. He's never going to win it. But not a world champs like that anyway.
No.
He still, you know, rocks up and turns up, and I guess it's respect for the sport and respect for your country. If your country asks you to go, you get it. And also, I guess in the long term, it looks good on your, like, on your CV to say you raced it, even if you didn't finish it.
Yeah.
But as we were saying, the Tour de France this year, I mean, I was in the mindset at the start of it that I wasn't going to watch it because Mark Cavendish hadn't been selected. And I'm a massive Cav fan, as I think, everyone knows. And I was like, don't care. Don't like it anymore. It's dead to me. Yeah. Don't want to watch it. And my God, am I glad that I decided to watch it still.
Yeah, same. I'd love Cav as well. And I was so gutted when I couldn't believe it. I was like, he's form of his life. He's just shown that he could be in breakaway all day. He's won the British champs. Like, what more do you want?
Yeah.
But I do wonder if there's like that, you know, he's riding for a Belgian team.
Yeah.
He, they don't want that Merckx title to be taken. Like, I don't know if before last year's tour, anyone would have said he's definitely going to match the record. Yeah. So when he did, I think they were a bit like, oh God, I don't know if our fans believed he could do it, but whether like management and the team thought he could, who knows? But yeah, I don't know if there's politics in it. I hope it isn't, but...
I think it is. I really do.
Yeah.
Because Patrick Lefebvre he's mates with Eddie Merckx.
Like, yeah, Eddie Merckx was there the other day at the start. Like, it would have... Yeah, you're like that. It would have been handed to him on a plate almost. And with the sprinters being there, like the ones that are there, like Wout's winning, which is amazing, but I'm kind of like, if he'd have gone in the form he's in with the other sprinters who are there, Bennett didn't go.
Caleb Ewan's cracked about 50 times.
Yeah, I think he would have got it. He could have contested the green jersey. And it's like the first time the winner of the green jersey has been able to ride but hasn't been selected since like 1984 or something. Yeah. It's been so long. And it's really, I don't know, I'm really sad that he's not there. That's like the biggest disappointment for me.
I think it, I understand, if I try and think of it logically, mm-hmm. I understand where Patrick Lefebvre's gone. Cav is old, Fabio Jakobsen's young. We, you know, Cav's maybe got 2 years left. I can kind of see that perspective of it. And that's me being, trying to take the politics out of it. My head says that Patrick Lefebvre's gone, I don't want Eddie Merckx, my mate, to not have this record, and I don't want to see it going to some cocky Manx man, basically.
Yeah.
That's what how I see it in my head. Yeah. And I agree, Cav is probably in the best form we've seen him in, you know, over this year and last year, probably in, I don't know, 6-7 years. And he maybe, you know, as you say, wow, is just, I don't even know how to explain that guy, to be honest with you, apart from one of the nicest men in the world. But
it's Wout's world and we're living in it. I was reading today that him, Merckx, and Hino,
Bernardino. Yeah.
They're the only three to have ever won all classifications of races on one single tour, like a mountain, a TT, a sprint.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not going to happen anymore. Like, riders like Wout van Aert aren't meant to exist anymore because of the, you know, marginal gains, narrowing of the sport, being really niche, being really good at what you do. You're meant to be a sprinter. You're meant to be a time trial specialist. You're meant to be a climber. And he's all of them. Yeah. And it's like, that is phenomenal. And when you say he's a nice guy as well, you're just like, oh, of course he is. Yeah. Go on. Just make him nice as well.
Yeah, he's annoyingly nice. But I think, you know, You think of the tour, like, Cav would have probably won a stage easily, would have won a stage. Like, if Jesper Philipsen won a stage, we're probably the best bike crew I've ever seen. So, and Jakobsen's won a stage. Caleb Ewan's just not been, he's had so much bad luck this year. And which is a shame because it would have been great to see him really contest some of the sprints. He's just crashed so many times. But then you look at who else was there really on the sprinting side? That's kind of it. That's kind of it, really. You know, there wasn't really, because it is a hilly tour this year. There's not that many opportunities for sprinters. And then you look at what Wout's doing, and to see a rider every day attacking from the gun. I think every stage he's attacked from the gun.
Yeah.
And and the reason is what he's doing, what Sagan was doing when Sagan was dominating the green jersey. And there you go. There's a rider as well. We just completely negated. Yeah. He's not even up. I mean, he's coming
there.
Yeah. Yeah. He's there, and like, people aren't thinking about him, you know. Yeah. And he's won more green jerseys than anyone else. You know, he's had 7 of them. But you look at what Wout's doing, and he's doing what Sagan did, like, you know, when he was in his prime, probably, but doing it better because he's staying in those front groups over the mountains. And then working as a domestic.
Yeah, that's it. He's doing his race. He's finishing his race, and he's going back to win the race for the yellow jersey. You're like, how is that even possible? It's amazing to watch. And he's doing something that, have we seen that before? I'm not sure if you've seen a rider do that. He's adding, like, the dimensions he's adding to the race. Like today, like, well, yeah, today, yesterday for you. He went off. Stage 18. He went up and then he managed to, like, shape that race so much so that he basically set that up for the win.
Yeah.
And he was celebrating over the line as if he'd won as well. And I'm like, how? That's incredible. And they've sewn up the green jersey. They've sewn up the polka dot jersey now. The one disappointment I have with Wout this year, and it's not Wout's fault, I really wanted to see a Wout van Aert, Matthew van der Poel breakaway.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like those two just, like, off the front. Matthew van der Poel hasn't had the form, and then he went home. Because there's so much history and rivalry there. I was like, that's what I wanted to see. Didn't see that, unfortunately.
But it nearly happened at one stage, didn't it? It nearly happened. And then that was the stage that van der Poel got off the bike as well.
Yeah. They had a little chat. And I was like, oh, I'd love to be a fly on a wall. I'd love to hear what they say.
The best one, imagine if it was Van der Poel, Pidcock, and Van Aert as well. That would have also been brilliant because you've just literally just gone, right, let's just drop the cyclocross, the three yeah. big in cyclocross in the same race and just see what yeah. happens. But, you know, you put it into perspective, like Van der Poel very openly said that he's not in good form after doing the Giro. Mm. He put his hands up very open about it. Pidcock, first Tour de France, incredible. Can't deny it. I mean, yes, he's out of the top 10, but did anyone ever expect him to even be in the top 10 at any point?
Winning on Alpe d'Huez at his first tour. Yeah. As, you know, how many times has he ridden up there, let alone raced up there? Like, incredible.
Yeah.
For such a young... And, like, forget how young they are as well. He's so young. And he's doing things that, you know, most of the riders in their 30s can't do and in their late 20s. They're really experienced. And I love it. I love to see it. But on that, on age... that this tour has been amazing for that, because just before the tour, all the meme pages being like, oh yeah, Israel sending all these old geese, like, and then look, they turn up and they get they're winning stages. I love it. I love to see it.
It's nice to see. It's like, I mean, the one that made me chuckle yesterday was Geraint Thomas was saying that he said he's 12 years younger than Pogacar.
Oh.
And he's just like, I can't do any more than I'm doing. I'm 12 years. Yeah. I'm 12 years. Sorry, older. He's 12 years older than Pogacar, not younger. Imagine if he was younger. 12 years older than Pogacar. There's 12 years difference between them. And I mean, the fact that G is in third at 36 is super impressive anyway.
Yeah. He's riding his own race. I love it. He's like, podium, that's a win for me.
Yeah, I think he is happy with getting on the podium, bearing in mind who the competition is this year as well. Like, it feels, since he won in 2018, it feels like it's just gone up a notch again.
Yeah.
Which is the nature of how the sport's growing and developing. And I think we're getting to this point where we're seeing young riders coming through who have had that support from nutritionists, doctors, you know, training with science behind them from the age of, like, you know, very young ages. And yes, it was happening with the previous generation of riders, like Cavendish and Geraint Thomas and Chris Froome, etc. It was happening with that generation, but the science and the technology has advanced so much more since, you know, you think 10 years ago when Bradley Wiggins won the Tour, and the difference in the bikes and the kit and the helmets since then.
Yeah. It's
huge changes. Yeah. But
they're being raised, like, these kids are being raised by people who lived at this, you know, through the science in cycling era. So it's just going to keep progressing. Like, it's exciting to see what their kids will do and the next generation will do. Like, well, Van Aert's kid, if he's a pro.
Well, did you see that Bradley Wiggins' son, Ben, is I can't remember what race it is, maybe scratch race, European champion?
No way. Yeah. Like, junior Euro
champion. Not junior, like, European champion on the track.
Shit. How old am I? How old are we? What year is it?
I know, it's crazy, isn't it?
Oh my God. That's really cool.
I think I'm pretty sure it's just, I don't think it's junior or under 23. I think pretty certain it's just European champion.
Wow.
Something.
I love it.
And then, like, I mean, come on, that's the pressure he's under being Bradley Wiggins' son, but still amazing at the same time.
Things like Eleanor Baxted and Zoe Baxted with Magnus being like, we want to be the first to win the Roubaix father-daughter duo. And I'm like, here for it. That's absolutely amazing. I think
it's going to happen. You know, those two, they're unbelievably, they're better riders than their dad.
You just got to target that Paris-Roubaix and you'll be onto it. But yeah, they are. They're phenomenal. And I'm excited to see what they do. And I'm excited, like, looking through, it's interesting though, I was looking at the Tour de France women's race start list, and I think for the men's race they are sending a lot of the younger lads to go and race and get the experience, but because it's the kind of inaugural new women's Tour de France, they are sending, like, the experienced riders, and these teams are stacked. And I was trying to, like, figure out who's going to win the white jersey, young rider jersey, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Like, there's not as many, like, known names, which for the men's race, like their household names in the young rider classification,
yeah,
not so much Majet, but again, it's because it's the first. Like, there are lots of riders that could win that jersey that just aren't kind of being sent. Like Niamh Fisher-Black from New Zealand, she would be like a shoo-in for the young rider classification, but
yeah,
SD Works are like, well, you know, we've got a stacked roster already. So,
well, yeah, they're taking Anna Shackley, aren't they?
I don't think so. I don't think she's on the team. They've got Chantal Vanderbrook, Black, Majuris, and Rusa.
Yeah.
And then they've got Demi Vollering. They've got Ashley Milman-Passio and Lotta Kopecky. So that's their... which is nuts. They could all win stages. They could all win. They could just all win, full stop. Like, yeah. I'd love to see like Christine Majuris go and be let loose in a breakaway or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's incredible. I'm really hoping that, you know, I could talk about the women's on for days, but I'm hoping that SD Works do well because, you know, they've been so dominant for so long. It's the one thing that they don't have on their Palmares is, yeah. Well, they've got Lacourse on there from,
yeah,
you know, Vollering when it lasts and stuff. And yeah, it's an exciting race. It's going to be good.
The women's, the fact that it's happening, the first thing that I think, loads of people saying this is the first women's Tour de France. It technically isn't.
No. You know,
there was a women's tour in like the 80s, I think it was, or maybe even earlier. And then it got cancelled and like basically some twat turned around and was like, women shouldn't be riding bicycles, which is bullshit. And then we had the course, which, to be honest, I always thought felt like I actually thought it was insulting, if I'm being honest. Because it was like, oh, we're going to give you one stage. And then the year that it went up to three stages, it was like, okay, we're making progress here. This is a good start point. Yeah. And then it was like, nah, we're going to go back to one stage again.
And then like gesture, wasn't it? Like, it was just almost like tokenism. And I remember, was it 2017, and the women's race was the stage from Briançon up the Isolard.
Yeah.
And that was it. So it was like, yeah, great, but it's the one race. And the men were doing it in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, like, Annemiek van Vleuten, who won the stage and won Lacourse because it was just the one day, she made it up the Isoard faster than all but two of the men. And everyone was just like, yeah, like, what? You know, that's not enough. And, you know, even the route this year is interesting because it's like, you know, kind of flat, hilly, undulating, and then there's two really hard stages at the end.
Yeah.
And for the first one, like, it's unknown, right? We don't know. But then at the Giro, the women's Giro, they've got that stage race kind of, you know, formula cracked. And, you know, Annemiek won it this year. So she's kind of favourite for it for the Tour de France this year. But then I'm kind of like, she's got form, but Giro is 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Is she going to carry that over? Or is she going to be like tired? Vollering's been training, she's been wrecking the course, she's been out there like, you know, trying to see if resting will be better than racing. And this is going to be really interesting to see what happens on these few days. Like, I've tried to write predictions down, I've listened to every preview show out there, and I still don't know. I still couldn't call the stages and who's going to win. It's going to be so good.
The thing is with the women's side of the sport is I do think it's changed on the men's side, that the men's side the last year or two has started to become really unpredictable, like post Team Sky and Ineos domination at Grand Tours. And then the men's side is now starting to be a bit unpredictable, but then you've got certain riders on the men's side that you're always like, it's going to be that person, or it's going to be, you know, it's like you look at, you've got Wout, Van der Poel, Alaphilippe, Pogacar, I guess you could jump Vingegaard in that list now, and Primoz.
Yeah.
Probably don't look that much past that. And then you go, oh, TT, Ganna, you know, it's kind of a bit, it's relatively predictable. The women's side, I think, is incredibly unpredictable. And like one of the examples that of recent times that I can think of is the British national champs with Alice Towers.
Yeah.
Like,
it's amazing.
She's young, like she's junior or under 23. British champ as well as the overall British champ.
It's the first race, wasn't it? She was like, this is my first win. you know. And I love that, and it shows like that elevation in like, you know, since Anna van der Breggen retired, you know, how her team rode for her and how aggressive she was when she was riding, and how like she was almost sort of expected to win sometimes, and she did because she won everything, she was so dominant. And sort of like, I guess Voss as well. And I love that Voss is still like super competitive and still up there and still winning. And that's why I really want to see her do well at the Tour de France. I want to see her, like, I'd love to see her win. She's won. She didn't get the Paris-Roubaix. And I'm like, I hope she does before she retires. And, but I, even just a day in yellow would be great to see. That would be iconic. We saw Marianne Vos racing in yellow. Perfect.
And it could happen. It could happen when you look at the stages. So the first, what, two stages are flat. And then you've got, I mean, the thing is with Voss is you can't say she's a sprinter really, because she can kind of do everything. Like, you've got two flat stages, two hilly stages, flat stage, hilly stage, two mountain stages. Like, the only ones that she might struggle on is probably the mountain ones, unless she was to like getting a breakaway.
Yeah. I hope she goes for the points jersey.
Yeah.
I think because Wiebes is definitely, Lorena Wiebes is going to be, she's won 10 stages this year already. She's so dominant on the flat, on the sprint stages, like just the straight out sprint stages. I think she's going to be really dominant. But you've got these like hilly slash mountain stages.
Yeah.
I'm like, ah, this is Voss territory. Like La Course a couple of years ago when it was like really rainy that first day. When Deignan took it, it was just like three, four riders at the end. And if Voss can get it down to like a reduced bunch sprint, she could, that's where she dominates, isn't it? She could do really well there. So I want to see her maybe go for the points. That would be great.
Yeah, it'd be really cool, wouldn't it? And I mean, as you say, for the overall,
it's going to be interesting. And
I don't know who I put my money on. I really don't.
Yeah.
I might be on the side of Demi Bollering.
Yeah.
But just because she's definitely got a better team around her.
I think I'm worried that she's, well, I'm saying Annemiek van Vleuten, but then she's just come off the Giro. She's really dominant on the hills. But is this too... Is this not hard enough for her?
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. If it was just the last 2 days, I'd be like, I will go and put money on Vleuten to win.
Yeah.
But is this going to be quite hard enough? Because the flat and the hilly stages, unless she gets a good breakaway and she's off by herself, which no one's going to let Annemiek go up the road after what she did at the Worlds.
Yeah.
If she could do that, then yeah, maybe. But I don't know. I really don't know. She'll probably, I would put bets on her for the QOM jersey.
Yeah.
She's going to win Queen of the Mountain. But then, yeah, overall, I have like five names that I've put down as who I think. Because also we've got Cavalli and Ashley Moorman-Passio, because she's going to be retiring at some point. But also, again, she's in such a strong team. What is her role going to be?
Yeah.
Are they going for Vollering for the GC? And then for like Kopecky on some of the sprints, but I'm not sure Kopecky's straight up sprinter. But then if she gets up the road on some of the flat hilly stages, she's going to take it. Ah, it's just going to be so good. I'm so excited about this. It's like Christmas. This is better than Christmas. Women's Tour de France.
Yeah, I mean, it's eight stages. To get it to the level, to the level that it's at now, with the funding and the intention to make it a thing, like we've not seen. Like I said earlier, we have had a women's tour before, and we've had La Course, but we've not seen something with this kind of investment in the sport and actually ASO going, oh, we see the value in this. You know, because fundamentally, I'm pretty sure it was ASO who kind of decided not to continue the women's tour back in the 80s.
That that blows my mind. Like, it seems like such a strange decision to be made, because it was, so it used to exist, I think it was what, 84 to 89, and it was like 17 days.
Yeah.
But they used to have to split it in half. So I was listening to a really good interview with Hannah Walker and Maria Blower, and she was saying that they used to split in half and they used to run two races because the women weren't allowed to race more than 10 days straight. Just, and it's like, well, they can because they are, they're doing it.
Yeah.
And they used to like combine it and then have it overall in France over the Paris at the end of the 17 days.
Mm.
And yeah, when the course came in, like, I do remember some interviews with Deignan being like, this is just a joke, really, you know, because they have the Girardin, like the Girardin, and they've got like the women's format for a giant, you know, a stage race that lasts more than a few days. Because it almost feels awkward when they do these stage races that are kind of like 2 or 3 days, because you're like, well, you know, everything's tied up on the first day. You could win it on the first day. And you're like, that's not the kind of point of stage racing, I guess. So.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. To me, like, a stage race should be a week.
Yeah.
Like, it just,
at least.
Unless it, you know, unless it's a grand tour, I guess. But equally, you know, I believe that we'll see the potential that the women's tour will become a longer thing as they start to realize how much of a success it's been. But equally, we as a fan, I'd love to see a 3-week women's Tour de France. But you have to also ask, do the women racing want a 3 weeks women's Tour de France? They might not actually want it equally. And do they want to be racing the same? I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
Mm-hmm.
Do they want to be racing the exact same route and stages as the men? You know, don't know. Could be. I'm not in that situation as a women pro cyclist in that opportunity. There could be an argument, because I've seen interviews with some. I think it was Tiffany Cromwell might have said it. She's like, we don't want.
Yeah,
be racing a 3-week race with 250 kilometer stages. We don't really want that. Like, it's unnecessary. Yeah. But we want an equal opportunity to be doing a Tour de France.
Exactly.
Which is, you know, it's completely fair enough, and I kind of agree with that. But hopefully, I think there's so much momentum happening with this year in going towards this tour. People are genuinely excited about it, which is amazing. It's incredible. Like, the riders are in the men's and the women's side of the sport. The teams are. We're starting to see teams turn around and being like, actually seeing the benefit of having a men's and a women's team, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, I never expected there to be a women's UAE team, I'll be honest. But there is one.
I know. Yeah. This is, their teams are seeing, like, you know, they've invested in junior teams and development teams, and they're like, now they're like, oh wait, actually, yeah, we, this actually makes more sense to have a women's side of the team. And it does, because, you know, the whole slogan for the Tour de France Farm is watch the farm. Like, you watch it because you can. And so I think when people are like, oh, you know, the argument for, and there's so much on this discussion, but the argument for, oh yeah, but no one watches the women's racing. It's like, because it's made so difficult but to watch. Like, it's, you know, the fact that the UCI have to say, no, you must broadcast this live, or at least, what, it's like 40 minutes live? There's like a really, like, it's like the minimum, the bare minimum. And you get races like Ride London that didn't broadcast live. And you're like, it's 2022. What are you doing? Like, there's no room for that now. Like, we've kind of passed that and we're on to, you know, this, we're not going to stand for it. And they've been demoted next year. They're not a UCI World Tour race.
Really?
And I'm like, yeah. I think, hang on, definitely check that. But I'm pretty sure that, because they didn't broadcast this year.
But they did that with the Girardin, didn't they, as well? They downgraded
until
it.
Until they got the shit together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is completely fair enough. You shouldn't be fucking about with that kind of stuff. Now, the bit, the bit that I think is quite interesting, I've just got the team list in front of me now, and that says 24 teams, I think, racing.
Mm-hmm.
24 teams. And of those 24 teams, I think 13 have a men's and a women's team.
Yeah. They've most of the World Tour ones, isn't it?
Yeah. Trek Segafredo, Movistar, FDJ, Jumbo Visma, DSM, UAE, Bike Exchange, Confidis, EF, Planta Pura. I've said they do because the men's Planta Pura team is De Koenig Alpecin.
Yeah.
And then Arkea, they've got the women's team. Unox is men's and women's team. And then human powered health is a men's and women's team. Yeah. Another one, I think maybe Sam Miguel, that team might be a men's team as well. I'm not certain. And there's a couple which I'm not certain of, but they're definitely the ones that I definitely know are men's and women's teams. And, you know, I look at that list and I know quite a lot from the Jumbo Visma side of it. And a big reason, there are several reasons why they set up a women's team. One of it was big Dutch company owns, Jumbo is a massive Dutch, is that right? Yeah, Dutch supermarket chain. Yeah. It's a Dutch team. They wanted to have Vos on their team. There was also a lot of pressure from Cervelo to come on board. When Cervelo came on board as a bike sponsor, Cervelo have always insisted in their history of sponsoring a men's and women's team. So whether that's been, in the past, you think Dimension Data, they were looking after, I can't think of the team's name now, but it was a team that Milman Passio was on, Cervelo Bigler. So you had Dimension Data and Cervelo Bigler at the same time. And then you had the Cervelo Test team, which was a men's and women's team that Lizzie Deignan was on it at one point. And then Jumbo Visma, men's and women's team. And part of their insistence of sponsoring a team is that then they need to have a women's team, like association. They always have to have a men's and a women's team, Cervelo have always said. And when Cervelo Bigler sort of folded, I guess, as that team, they didn't have a women's team. And so, and then Dimension Data went to BMC, and then it was the whole massive bike. Then they had Sunweb, which was a men's and women's team.
Yeah.
And then it was like Jumbo Visma, where they kind of insisted that to go over to Jumbo Visma, they needed to have a women's team as well. So there were several things pushing Jumbo Visma to do it. And then I think with CCC folding, being able to get Vos and then grow a team of, you know, really incredibly strong riders with a very Dutch basis, I guess. It's a lot of Dutch riders in the team. But then getting young riders who they'd taken over from Sunweb, like Anna Henderson, for example, who had already been on the bikes, already used to the bikes, or they've been able to kind of like, they had the test bed with a lot of riders there as well. And then, you know, I think Trek has probably had a very similar mentality as of being like, we always have to have a men's and women's team. Like they were one of the first, I think they were one of the first teams to openly say that the men and women are being paid the same.
Yeah. And I love that. That's so important. And that's what's going to drive up the like more like equality and prize money and that kind of stuff. Because even things like Ineos, they still don't have a women's team.
It's crazy, isn't it?
The money they spend on these races. And I mean, obviously, I don't know the mechanics behind it. I don't understand the finances of it. But as a fan, you're kind of like, this is where we're going with it now. Are you gonna make a women's team? And I really hope they do. And I really hope. But then at the same time, you've got SD Works, who are a standalone, and they're incredible. But that's been its own little factor of racing. The Dutch, you know, trade team kind of thing. So, yeah, it's a very exciting time.
I would imagine that there will be a women's Ineos team at some point. I can't see it not happening. I think I read something recently that was saying that the best investment in sport right now is investing and sponsoring in women's teams, whether that's football, rugby, cycling, whatever it is. That's the best investment turn back on sport right now. And, you know, we're seeing that with the, you know, women's football team. The English team is doing amazing and people are really like bought into it and following that team. And I think in the cycling side of it, you look at the amount of teams, you know, I think of the ones that come to my mind of this year was like EF taking over or kind of co-sponsoring a women team, I guess, but then kind of basically bringing over all their finance and resources into that women's team. So Tipco Silicon Valley is still involved as a sponsor, but there was already that connection there because they were on Cannondale bikes. There was already that tie-up. But what they've done is they bought Rafa over, they bought POC over, you know, they bought some of the other sponsors across. Like, I think, I'm not sure if Tipco Silicon Valley were on Vision components and wheels and bars and stem, but that's all been bought over. You know, it's the same back staff. Obviously, it's it's not the same backstop, but it's the same structure has been brought over to sort of elevate that team. And then you look at like Uno X, which is a, you know, second tier team who's racing way above the level they are, kind of come out of nowhere. And they did a year as a men's team and straight away were like, we're doing a women's team. Yeah. There was no questions asked about it. So we've done a year, the men's team, got the team out there, and they very bluntly were like, we're building a strong women's team. And you look at the riders that they've got that they're taking to the tour, there's two great British riders. Yeah.
Yeah, Hannah Barnes. They're an exciting team. They've just signed. And like other things as well that they're doing that's just like proving that they're investing in women's cycling for women. They've got Eleanor Barker, who spent the year on maternity leave so far. Like that's what to do. Like, you know, with Trek, supporting Lizzie Deignan through pregnancies and stuff. Like, it's not, it feels like, you know, they're not just doing it for the sake of it. They're not just doing it for the financial investment. They're doing it for like the moral investment as well. Like, you know, you can say, oh, it's a good investment and it is a business model, et cetera, but like, even if there was none of the money in it, the men's teams would still exist and it would still be the women's teams that were like fighting for the finances in a way. So like, they're doing it because like morally it's the right thing to do now. Like, you know, women want to race, women are good at cycling, let them in, let's do it. And I love to see stuff like that. Like, I'm excited to see UNOX develop and I want them to do well at the tour. It would be really cool to see Joss Loudon go up in a breakaway.
Yeah.
Or Hannah Barnes up there. I'd be like, yes.
I just thought of another rider that's a good shout as well. Longo Borghini.
Yeah. I've got her down for stage four because she did the gravelly, the hilly gravelly stage.
Yeah.
I think she's my shout for stage four. I think she's going to be good. But it's a Strada Bianchi kind of stage.
Yeah. It's a good shout,
12K
actually.
12K of gravel.
Yeah.
Definitely her. So I think she might be going for stages. I don't know if she'll go for the overall because of those two mountain stages at the end.
Yeah.
But I would love to see her. And that could be a day in yellow. She could start the mountain stages in yellow. If she did really well, whoever does really well on that stage four, because it could all go to shit on those gravel sections. It could all, you could lose it. You might not win it that day, but you might lose it that day because of how spread out it might get. It might get broken up. It might all stay together. Who knows? But gravel's never going to be, you know, an easy day out. So.
It's never. I mean, I like that it's been brought into stage racing a bit. You know, gravel is kind of become very in vogue almost at the moment. Like, it's definitely, apart from e-bikes, gravel bikes and gravel cycling is the fastest growing part of cycling at the moment. The only reason e-bikes is ahead of it is because that's probably more accessible to a wider range of people. But I mean, you still bear in mind as well with e-bikes, there's e-gravel bikes, you know, there's a great crossover. But I mean, if someone asks me if I could buy one bike, I get asked it quite a bit, and people are like, oh, I can buy one bike. What bike should I buy? And I'm like, just get a gravel bike. Like, it's so versatile. Two sets of wheels on a gravel bike. Do what you want. Road wheels, off-road wheels. You're kind of covered there. So I really like that it's getting incorporated into races, because it, at the end of the day, you can ride a road bike on gravel. It's fine. It's not. And the sort of gravel they're riding on, it's absolutely fine. But it also makes it exciting. It adds an element of something different. It's not just racing up a hill or you know, riding on a flat stage or whatever it is. It just adds another element to the race, or cobbles, whatever it is. It's another surface to add something. Like, you know, we think of the classics and you racing on the cobbles is amazing. It's just incredible to watch.
And that's why I love that there was the Ardennes stage in the Tour de France this year, because the drama that it adds, it's, if that was the same stage, same elevation, same profile on a road, you'd be like, oh great, a day for the sprinters, and you're like, no, today is a classics day. So I loved seeing that in there, and it just makes it, you,
that bit on that stage of Jonas Vingegaard jumping on a bike that was, I think it was Nathan van Hooydonk's bike, who rides a 58 and Vingegaard's on a 54, but van Hooydonk rides a 58 with all the seat post out.
He's
very tall. And Vingegaard's, you know, 5'11", something like that. 5'10", 5'11". Rides a 54. I know that because I've got his, my R5 is his, was supposed to be his spare bike. So
amazing. That's pretty cool. But then, yeah, like he was riding on a bike that was massive, and it was just incredible to see, but also felt really hard for him.
Couldn't get on the saddle and just tried, did like 3 or 4 pedal strokes, and the car got there. And like another example, Wout van Aert saved that day for Vingegaard. Jeez. And
he was up there already. He was in, is the day he lost yellow? He lost yellow that day, didn't he? Because that's the day that, did Pog get it that day? Who was it? God, everything's merging into one now.
I don't think he lose yellow that day.
No, it wasn't Pog that day. Yeah. Anyway, I loved that stage. It feels like so long ago. It was so long ago.
Yeah. We're near the end of the tour now.
Yeah.
Now, one thing we haven't talked about, I think we've kind of covered a bit of a preview of the... So the women's tour starts on Sunday. 8 days of racing. It's basically you've got a couple of flat days, a couple of hilly days, and then finish from two bonkers mountain days, like the super Plante de Belfi, not just the Plante de Belfi, it's the same climb with the gravel bit on the top. That's the last day. It's going to be carnage. Mm-hmm. And the jersey could literally, on the women's tour, the jersey could change potentially on a daily basis, which is amazing to think of that in a racing context. So if you, I mean, the total is still, 3,500 kilometers over the course of 8 days. It's big.
Long way.
And I would highly recommend if people, what am I on about? Thousands.
One something. Yeah. I was like doing the maths and I was like, wait.
Maybe its elevation is, I don't know what the total elevation is. There's a lot of elevation, just over 1,000 kilometers of over the course of 8 days. The men's race is like 3,500 K. That's over 3 weeks.
Like a week of the men's. It's like from rest day to rest day kind of thing, isn't it?
It's a full-on week of the men's tour, basically. And, you know, we could see from Sunday until the following Sunday. So you've got 24th of July until the 31st of July, 8 days of racing. Please watch it.
Any way possible.
Yeah, watch it.
Just watch it, engage with it.
Yeah, engage with it, talk about it on social media. The more people that are sharing and talking about it, the better at the end of the day. There's the best women in cycling at the moment racing it. And as a British person, there's quite a few British riders there. So, who could win stages? You know, there's no reason why Anna Henderson could win a stage. You know, she's getting a breakaway, she could win a stage. Fight for Georgie, Alice Towers, British champ. You've got...
We could end up with a jersey. Fight for Georgie, she's my pick for the white jersey. I'm hoping she gets the rider. Because, it's going to be good. And that's another thing, the amount of effort that people are putting on. Yeah, social media. You go and like follow these women on social media, look at what they're putting out there. Look at the teams, look at what the teams are putting out there. You know, the insight that you get from following the teams on social media is amazing. Like, you get a real behind the scenes preview of it. And that's what they need. Like, they need the support. They need us to just watch it, because to prove, it's not that we don't think people want to engage and watch women's cycling. We know they do. We love it as much. It's a different sport almost, because as we were talking before, we were saying about, you know, what would it be like if it was like a 3 week stage race for women. Women's cycling is like, professionally, as a fan watching it, it's different. You don't get the same kind of racing. They race with their heart on their sleeve, because they know they've only got like a small window of opportunity in comparison to these kind of like strategic long games that the men can play in the Grand Tours, because they've got the time and the distance, whereas the women run out of road, you know, because they're shorter stages. It makes for fascinating viewing. So some of these stages, like, what, the first stage is 82K. That's going to be over in 2 hours. They're going to be flying around the Champs-Élysées. 2 hours out of your life, if you never watched it before, if you give it a crack.
The longest stage is 176K. But it's a flat stage,
Yeah.
They're like, they're all kind of around the, you know, 120, 130 kind of distance, aren't they, really? Yeah. Which is, even the, you know, they're not going to be, they're going to be long days on the bike still. Let's not get that wrong. And they're going to be fucking hard, but they're good distances to be able to watch it. Like, just put it on in the background while you're working. That's always what I do.
Yeah, definitely. So who do you think, do you have any ideas about who you want? I mean, probably be like, Voss to win. Who do you think is going to win the women's, or who do you think for the jerseys for the women's?
That's such a good shout. I think Voss could get the green jersey.
Yeah,
because I think Lorena Weavers is going to struggle on the hillier days.
Yeah,
I think Demi Vollering for the overall.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that, I don't know, I mean, I just think she's so good. And also she rides with a dog on her rucksack on her back. So
yeah,
she's cool. Like,
kudos there.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the polka dot could go to Van Bluten, or I would love Mormon Passio to get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Young jersey. I'm going to say I want Alice Towers to get it. She's British champ. Why not?
Yeah.
It'd be awesome. It'd be really cool.
That would be so good.
But I do, my head probably says someone like, I'll admit there's a lot of riders I don't know, but my head does also say someone like Fife Georgie could do it.
Yeah.
But I would love to see Alice Towers get it, because like, she races for not as, you know, a team that does not have the funding the same as a lot of the other teams. You know, she's a smaller team. She's, you know, drops a cog. What is it now? Le Col Wahoo, that one.
Yeah.
It's a much smaller team, but it would be really cool if they got something out of the tour. I think it'd be a massive deal, because they want to become a, you know, a top tier women's team. It'd be a massive thing for them. But I got to be on it, of the teams, I really do think that it's probably going to end up being between Trek, Movistar, SD Works. I mean, there's basically what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams I think it's going to come down between, which is Trek, Movistar, SD Works, FDJ, Jumbo Visma, and DSM.
Yeah, it's wide open. It really is. And you're looking at it like, FDJ have got a stack team as well. They've got riders that could win multiple stages, multiple jerseys. You know, they're sending incredible riders, and they're increasing their capabilities, and they're doing so well at the minute as well. So yeah, I'm so excited to see what happens. But I think, yeah, Queen of the Mountain jersey, Vluti, or I've put down Kristen Faulkner, because she's done really well recently, but again, they both went to the Giro, so whether they're going to carry that form over. Cavalli as well, I guess, maybe. Yeah. But points jersey, I'd love to see Voss do it, or Balsamo, because maybe she won't be going for the yellow, so maybe she'll go for the points jersey and Trek setting up stage wins and the points. Yeah, young rider, I think. It's a shame that Neve Fisher-Black isn't going with SD Works, because she's, you know, incredible. She could be going as a GC lead for another team, you know, and she's not even selected for SD Works. And she's a Kiwi, so super proud. She gets like on the news and stuff over here. I'm like, yes, I love it.
Cool.
So also, yeah, Fife Georgie for the white jersey would be amazing. But also there's a rider called Ali Wollaston, who's a Kiwi rider. She's riding for AG and AG Insurance NXTG team, and again, she's won a couple of races, or she's done quite well in some races this year in Europe. She's really young, and I think that would be amazing to see, at least a day in white, or, you know, win it outright. I think that would be absolutely awesome. And again, she's a Kiwi, so I'll have to put a name out there. And then overall, I have 5 names, so I'm not going to be able to I can't decide, and I've got like 3 crossed off and then 3 added back on. You know, it's an absolute mess. But yeah, Vluti could do it, I reckon. Vollering, I would love to see Demi Vollering do it. Mormon Passio, and I really, even if it's a stage win, or maybe even if it's a day in yellow, I really want to see Navid Oma do well.
Yeah,
she is such a fighter. She races amazingly. She's so like animated and dynamic. She seems really lovely as well, so I'm like, yeah, I want her to do well.
Facial expressions as well when she races.
Yeah.
Proper like gurning faces. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think it's going to be a really good really good race. I'm really excited to see it. And it's been nice because this has been such an exciting Tour de France as well. Yeah. So we're finishing an exciting Tour de France and we're going into something unknown that we know is going to be exciting. It's not going to be boring. The way it's set up, they've done it really well, I think. You know, on one hand, I'm like, oh, it would have been good to have like a hilly stage or a mountain stage earlier on. And I'm like, oh, actually, maybe they've set it up so that there is more opportunity for the yellow jersey to be shared around all the riders. Because yeah, actually, that's so. A pretty good way to run an inaugural, current inaugural, so like first edition of the new generation of Tour de France.
Yeah.
It's quite a good way to run it. So, yeah, I'm excited about that.
I think, it looks as though they've set it up, one, that the jersey could change hands a lot, which makes it exciting to watch. And also, two, that it looks like it's going to get harder and harder and harder and harder.
Yeah.
Which is also amazing to watch as a fan of the sport. And as you say, we've
brutal.
Had, yeah, and we've had such an exciting Tour de France where the jersey has changed hands several times. No one expected Yves Lampaert to hold it, believe it or not, at the start, which was insane to think that was.
I hope whoever put money on him on that first day won a lot.
I did not expect it. And then, you know, and the fact that the timing of it's perfect because everyone's been so had their eyes on the Tour and it's bang after the Tour, which is my problem, which is the my opinion, the problem with the women's Giro is it runs at the same time as the Tour.
It's and like so far away from the men's Giro d'Italia that actually you're like, oh, wait, you're kind of getting your head back into it. It's a different race. It's just that it's in Italy. Like, that's how it feels. Pink jersey, so
it's
I'm like
closer to the, they it's did, closer to the baby Giro than it is the men's Giro in timing,
which just seems
weird, but that's my gripe with that race. Is I really feel like that should be run like how they're doing with the Tours, the Giro should be together. But one thing we haven't talked about, which I hope before we end, is do you think Vingegaard's got the yellow jersey sealed now?
I want to say yes, but that's just because for today's stage, I would love to see like a breakaway, like a French rider breakaway. So this is going to be the first Tour de France where no French rider has won a stage since 1999.
Yeah.
And even before that, it only happened once and it was like in the 20s. So today I would love to see a breakaway and I really hope like Jumbo kind of facilitate a break, but then at the same time I think Jumbo's priority will be protecting the yellow jersey and maybe sending Wout up for a sprint to win. Wout could literally win like all of the last stages.
Yeah.
You know, I bet he's gonna come second on one of them at least, you know.
He's definitely gonna have a good punt at the TT and you could see him winning on the Champs-Élysées. He won it last year. You know, he knows how to race that one. And today's stage, they're saying, is crosswindy, stage 19. Yeah. So it could also, shit could go wrong quite drastically. Yeah. The other thing to mention is that, you know, Jumbo-Visma is a team that's lost the Tour de France on the second to last stage.
The TT is pretty safe, isn't it? It's a flat one. They're not going to be, you know, barring any crashes or anything really bad, you know, Pog and Vingegaard are close enough that, you know, even if Pog won the TT, which is also possible, he's not going to get that amount of time on Vingegaard unless, even if something catastrophic happens, he could still, you know, stay at 42K, isn't it? It's not. So I don't want him to lose it. I think, you know, he's earned it. Everyone said totally earned it. And it would be a shame if he lost it due to something mechanical, completely heartbreaking. And so, I think I'm going to touch wood. I think he's going to do it. I hope he does, because
I think for him, for that team, they've never won any jerseys at the Tour de France. So the fact that they've got the green jersey wrapped up and the points jersey, I think, is wrapped up now as well with Vingegaard. Yeah. You know, that's a success for the team, but the team went there to win the yellow jersey with Vingegaard or Primoz, and to, you know, Primoz is the world's most probably him and Caleb Ewan are the unluckiest riders at the Tour de France.
Definitely.
And there was a lot of questions of why he left the Tour, and Yeah, apparently he was struggling quite badly with the injuries because he popped his shoulder back in at the side of the road. He literally did it himself.
And carried on racing.
Which is nuts. But I wonder whether the other reason, the part of it was like so he can recover, but I wonder if his head just had gone as well. Like, no point of him being there. Like, he went there to go win the Tour de France. And, you know, seeing his teammate doing really well, which is amazing. Of course it is. And he's going to support his teammate. But at the same time, maybe it was the right decision for him to leave in that sense as well. But
yeah, like, it's not the role he's been developed into, is it, to support someone else? Like, I guess, not knowing a sudden clue about what it's like to be a professional cyclist, I imagine they have to really like hone in their skills, hone in that mindset to turn up and race a grand tour for 3 weeks as a GC contender. So to having to switch to then supporting Wout and Vingegaard halfway through, mentally that would have been so difficult for him. And to see when Kreisberg went home as well, that was horrible, because to go home through injury like that as well, that was not amazing. But the amount of people that have gone home, like UAE, there's like four of them left, and three,
it's Mark really Hurtie, sad. Pogacar, Brendan McNulty, and Mikkel Berg, I think it is. I think that might be it. Four riders. And I think Jumbo, I think, are on five or six, I think.
Yeah.
Vingegaard, Wow, Sepkus, Nathan van Hooijdonk, Christophe Laporte. Is there another one? Yeah, Tiche Benoot, six. They're on six.
Yeah.
And so they've lost Primoz and Kruijswijk. But then, I mean, it's the Tour de France. Like, on paper, as long as nothing like a crash or a mechanical goes wrong, he should win it. But as you say, there's so many other elements that could happen. We've got a day which like could be crosswinds today, so that could, it could all blow up. Equally, we could see, you know, we could see Pog go out the back and lose 4 or 5 minutes at the same time. Or you could see Geraint Thomas getting a breakaway and make up 8 minutes. It literally could happen. Could you imagine?
I would, you know, being Welsh, we probably like knight him or something. I don't know. Like, I would love to see that. But yeah, I mean, it's never going to happen. But I don't want them to lose it. Even if they did, though, Vingegaard's going to leave with the polka dot jersey, and Wout's going to leave with the points jersey, and that's incredible. But it was heartbreaking seeing Geschke lose that, because he has to now wear that for 3 days. He has to wear a polka dot jersey on behalf of Vingegaard for 3 days. He has to go and do the TT skin suit fit. He has to go and like race in it, and he has to race the Champs-Élysées in it. Like, that to me is like, I mean, they probably just respect the jersey loads, and they're like, yeah, of course I will have this amazing honour and race in it for you. But at the same time, you're like, this isn't mine.
Exactly. It's a... They gave Wow, the most combative rider yesterday, which is fucking brilliant. But I think he should have it for the best fact. He should probably have it for the whole race.
Do they do that? Do they do like an MVP? Like,
they do do something like it, They do something like it at the end. I mean, I'm just looking at all the differences at the moment and the overall. So Vingegaard has got 3:26 on Pogacar. Unless something goes wrong, you can't see Pogacar making that up. Yesterday was the day where everyone thought he could put time into Vingegaard. And then Geraint Thomas is 8 minutes back. So and then you got Geraint Thomas is going to be happy with a podium at the end of the day, I think. Like, he's raced incredible, and he's been up against it. You know, the Ineos team has not been as strong as previous iterations of that team. In my on paper, probably should have been, but in reality, it hasn't been so strong. Quintana in fifth, that's amazing. That's I see him up there. David Gaudeau in fourth at the moment, that's also really cool. Louis Menkes in sixth that's for Intermarché, that's a massive success. And for him, I guess for his like morale, because he's just had so much instability since Dimension Data folding and being all over the place. Vlasov in seventh, great result for his first tour. Bardet in eighth, like, can't complain at that. Would have been cool to see him stay up there, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I wanted him to win a stage. It would have been great to see Bardet win a stage.
I agree.
Definitely.
And then Lutsenko's ninth, Adam Yates in 10th. And considering Adam Yates has been saying he's not been very well, can't complain at that.
Yeah.
And then the points jersey, I mean, Wout is on 451 points. And second place is Pogacar on 219. Like,
yeah. That's incredible. He's sewn it up. It was like days ago. And they were like, oh, he just got all the points that he needs to secure the jersey. No one else can win now. Like,
and then the next nearest sprinter is, I mean, third is Jesper Philipsen. He's on 196.
Yeah. Is Jakobsen up there? He's fourth.
He's fifth. 155. Yeah. Pedersen is fourth on 158. Oh, yeah. And then, you know, King of the Mountains jersey, 72 points for Vingegaard, 64 for Geschke. Ciccone's on 61. Then it's Pogacar, Banner Art on 59, which is brilliant. Thibaut, Louis Menkes, Nelson Paulus, Pierre Latour, Geraint Thomas, 10th and 32. And then youth jersey, it's Pogacar, Pidcock, Brendan McNulty. That's your top three. And then, you know, Fred Wright is ninth, which is, that's a great result for him.
So far. Really impressed with Fred Wright. Like, I've loved seeing him. He was in the day he got breakaway and he should have got the competitive award. That would have been amazing. And he came second as well. Second on a tour stage at the Tour de France at that age. Amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible.
So,
and then it looks like Ineos are going to win the team classification, which is the classification that I don't think anyone really cares about, if I'm honest.
Except Movistar.
It was always Movistar that won it. Maybe Ineos is becoming the new Movistar.
Yeah. Been around so long.
They're fifth Movistar.
Are they?
They've dropped the gun on it, massively. Yeah. You know, it's Ineos, Groupama, FDJ, Yumbo-Visma, Bora, Movistar. That's your top five. And
so,
go on.
Sorry, I was going to say, looking at like the, you know, how far Wout van Aert is across all of those classifications. Do you see him in the future going for yellow jersey at the Tour de France? Do you think he could be a GC rider, or do you think he is just such a good all rounder? Do you think his current team would put him in that position further down the track?
I would love to see it happen, but I don't think he will do it. I'd love to see it happen because I just think if it's not the Tour, if it's the Giro or the Vuelta at a Grand Tour, I would love to see it happen. But I think the problem is they've got Vingegaard, who is younger than Wout.
Yeah.
And I think that I think Wout will probably just continually target the green jersey at the Tour. I think he'll try and beat Sagan's record. That's what I think.
Yeah. He'll probably end up getting we were always saying, like last year, we were saying Cavendish's record is going to be so secure for so long. Actually, like, is it? Is it going to be Wout van Aert that's going to go after that record now? Because it's possible, the amount of second places he's had. If all of his second places were firsts,
yeah,
because he got second first 3 days, he got another second later on, he's had 4 second places and 2 stage wins.
So he's won.
So you're like,
I just literally googled it, how many stages of the Tour has he won already? He's won 8,
which could have easily been 11 or 12.
Oh, yeah,
this time. So yeah, if he can do that every year.
Maybe they wouldn't be so grumpy about a Belgian guy winning it and breaking the record, you know.
There you go.
But the fact that he's 8 stages at the Tour de France, including a TT stage. So it's 9 stages in the Tour de France.
Mm.
So 8 individual stages, it's a team time trial stage. 1 team time trial stage in 2019. I don't know whether that counts or not, but 8 individual stages. And then, you know, he won the Tour of Britain last year, you know, that was cool.
Yeah.
And then I'm just looking at his, like, palmares. It's pretty nuts, really. Cyclocross world champion 3 times. Cyclocross national champion 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. Won the overall of the World Cups, like, 1, 2, 3 times. Super Prestige won the B-Post Bank Trophy. I don't actually know what that one is, but it's obviously not happening anymore. on the cyclocross. Then on the road, eight stages at the Tour de France, one team time trial, Tour of Britain overall, Tour of Denmark overall, and then one day races, national time trial championship twice, national road race championship once, Milan San Remo, Strada Bianchi, Gent Wevelgem, Amstel Gold, Omloop Het Nieuwsblad, and E3 Saxo Bank.
He's done. I want to see him in the World Stripes next year.
Oh, that'd be so good.
World champion. There we go. He has a chance to do it. Because is this just going to be a Wout van Aert like fan club podcast? Because I'm here for it. This is great. No, he's incredible, and he's definitely like deserved the credit he's got for the amount of effort he's put into this race. He's made it so interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, and looking back at the Giro this year, the lull in the Giro for the GC was just like, okay, you know, like waiting. The tour this year hasn't been like that. And I've loved how like competitive each jersey competition has been. Like last year, the yellow jersey was sewn up and it was like, okay, this is the most boring jersey competition to watch. And this year it's just been so dynamic in each of the, maybe not the white jersey so much, but the all the other ones have been an interesting watch. And yeah. And especially the King of the Mountain, loved it. Yeah, you know, watching court in the first week.
Give a shout out to so probably good. The coolest jersey in the tour.
Yes, isn't definitely.
It? Yeah.
Yeah, by far. Amazing. And at least they don't make them wear polka dot shorts with that one. Yeah. Oh, no, I'm excited for this last weekend. I reckon, well, he's definitely going to win stage. He's definitely going to come second on the stage. And I would love to see, I know this is like a bit of an out there prediction, but I'd love to see Christoph win on the Champs-Élysées again. I mean, it's really? Probably not. I would love to see that. Absolutely love Christoph. So if he could win the Champs-Élysées, he won in 2018. Groenewegen won in 17 as well. So, you know, a lot of them will be going for it. So it'll be an interesting stage. But
well, you're going to have Groenewegen, Christoph, Fabio Jakobsen, Wout van Aert. Is Caleb Ewan still racing? I'm not sure.
I think he is. I don't think he's gone home. He'll be going for it. And Sagan. He's still there. So, yeah, that's the last kind of... Well, because I don't think tomorrow... I reckon tomorrow might be a breakaway, or today might be a breakaway stage.
Oh, here we go. So you got Wout... I'm going to put it out there. You've got Wout in. Looking at the green jersey list here, I'm going to go for the top. Yeah. I think anyone in the top like 20 could probably win on the Champs-Élysées. Wout, Pogačar, Jasper Philipsen, Mads Pedersen, Jakobsen. Going to discount Vingegaard, Michael Matthews, Christophe Laporte could win it. Sagan, Fred Wright, Hugo Hull, Matteo Jorgensen, Groenewegen. Bettiol, Nils Pollitt, Danny Van Poppel. You know, there's a lot of people. Bossenhagen, fucking hell, could you imagine?
Ganna. Oh, the way he nearly missed out the other day. Yeah. Oh. I mean, it was great that he was up there. But I'd love to see Wonti do well on one of these stages.
Pidcock?
Yeah. Wide open. It's going to be a good weekend.
Yeah.
And it's not over. We've still got another 8 days of racing after this. So
exactly. So technically we've got 8, 9, 10, 11 days of good bike racing still to watch.
Going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
This is what we need. Because we always finish the Tour de France. So we've finished a great, a grand tour. And we're like, if it could just be a week longer.
Yeah.
One more week. And we're getting that with the women. So
yeah. So. Why don't we all make sure that we watch the women's tour and shout about it in all forms of social media and everywhere. Watch it, support the teams, sponsor the teams, do whatever you can with the teams. Sponsor the teams?
Yeah, buy their shit. Buy their stuff. Buy their merch.
If you've got loads of money, sponsor the team as well. Well,
even the smaller teams. Like send them money. Smaller teams, you can buy their jerseys and stuff. So yeah, do it. Support them that way.
We're probably going to talk in like roughly a month's time, and we'll have a lot to talk about. We'll have the Tour de France will be wrapped up. The women's tour will be wrapped up. I'm trying to think the next big thing on the calendar on the men's side will be the Vuelta.
Yeah. And then we're looking to Worlds.
And then we're looking towards the Worlds. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I'll talk to you in a while.
Yeah, definitely. It's been great to talk about my favourite thing. So, yeah, thanks very much, cycling fan. I'll see you soon.
Bicycles.